have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
What? If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor.
What difference at this point does it make?
If you're looking to make sense out of what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chick Ubellus, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on Internet radio. And you can join the show and let your voice be heard by dialing 917-889-3675. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Welcome back to another screwed up adventure here on Southern Sense, listening live on Blog or Fog Talk Radio, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, YouTube, Facebook, iHeart, and half a dozen other places. I don't even remember where we're at. Just go to our webpage, which is the name of the show, Southern Sense, as in common sense, southernsense.net. Or if you're at the old website and you have it bookmarked southern-sense, .com. I'm your hostess with the least mostest, the Radio Chickadee, Eddie, along with my crazy co-host, Curtis, CF, as in crazy, Bennett. Good afternoon, Curtis. You can tell, hey. I'm going to be on a roll today. I'm on a roll. I'm wearing no makeup, so if you're watching live on YouTube or Facebook, we're having a problem getting it re-embedded into our homepage. I don't know what happened, but something broke in the link, and I'm trying to get the guy who built my page to fix it for me. But we're playing telephone tag, so hopefully we'll have that back up and running next week. Mm. But Curtis, geez, it's going to be one of those days.
Yeah, I imagine I wasn't the only one that missed this this grand, I guess you call it finale, because I think this is his last State of the Union speech. You know, I wanted to be able to sleep last night without nightmares. So I didn't watch it.
Well, me and a couple of glasses of scotch later, I managed to sit through the whole debacle, which we'll be talking with one of our first guests, Mark Tapscott, in the Epoch Times, or Epic Times, as I call it. We'll go over what he had said, and I scribbled down some notes. And after about one full page of scribbling that I'm putting up before the camera, and little notes on the side, Bart, and you can see that... I must have been really pissed. Oh, my goodness. I'm like, oh, geez. Oh, good Lord. Holy cow. I'm just trying to read my handwriting. I was really, really. One thing I wanted to ask, I noticed a bunch of the members of Congress were wearing these name tag badges, and they had the number 153 scribbled in it, and no one ever explained what the heck those badges were for. I'm going to ask Mark, maybe he knows, but I could not figure it out. And when I was listening to Talking Heads afterwards, I didn't hear anyone mention that either. So if anyone knows what the 153 was that the members of Congress were wearing on their lapels, edify me, please. But we also have someone I haven't had.
Could you tell which side of the aisle they were? Were they Democrats or Republican side?
No, both.
Oh.
Both sides. I saw some on Republicans and I saw some on Democrats, which confused me. So unless it's a number of a bill, I don't know. Anyway, on the second half of the show, someone I haven't had on the show, good Lord, probably in 10 or 12 years, Catherine Engelbreit. She is the founder of True the Vote. She started off with a Tea Party group back in 2009 when we formed ours here in South Carolina, and she was forming hers in Texas. And I had the pleasure of speaking with her way back when at the start of this movement, the Tea Party movement, which then morphed into the MAGA movement. And she's been maintaining since 2010 TrueTheVote.org. And a lot has been happening with her through the years. And, oh, my goodness, I pulled up her bio on Wikipedia. Oh, does she have the greatest joy in pissing off the left.
Wow.
And I have to give a shout-out to someone listening in. She always listens in into the studio here. Our friend Sweet Sue pointed out that I am the most shadow-banned person on Twitter, or actually X, formerly known as Twitter. I was wondering why I went from 5,000 followers down to about 200, and now I'm back up to, I think, about 763 or something like that. So I'm climbing back slowly and surely, laughing my butt off.
Well, you know, we have a tendency to recoup, you know, our losses over time. You know, just got to keep chugging at it.
Oh yeah, that
basically, yeah.
Yeah, that I'm doing. I'm laughing because I have a couple of other accounts under, you know, some fictitious names, one of them being my Tea Party, Beaufort Tea Party. So I'm able to repost things using that. Matter of fact, I have a bunch of them I haven't used in years. I wonder if they're still good.
I know,
because I sent a direct message over to Elon Musk and said, what's up with this? New hashtag. Set me free is
yeah.
The new hashtag I created on X. They set me free.
Yeah.
Stop the shadow ban.
Yeah, he's in the news a lot, Elon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see if anyone
picks
that up and flies with it. But
yeah.
See if he picks it up and flies with it. And you know, and I'm a verified account. You'll see a little blue check mark next to my name. If you could find Southern Sense on X. Oh, we're going to have fun with this. We're definitely going to have fun with this. Anyway, we have a lot to talk about, a lot to do. Mitch McConnell stepped down as Speaker of the House. There'll be a new race to get not Speaker. Oh, good Lord, I'm talking about the wrong chamber. Senate Majority Leader.
Minority.
In the Senate. Senate Minority Leader in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, he's not going to run for re-election, and already there's a couple of people throwing their hats in the ring for 2026 to get his seat. Hillary, going on a rant, talking about the old guy who can't remember anything and the other guy that's the other old guy who's killing, destroying democracy. Wait. She's comparing Trump to Biden. You know which one is old and doddery? I don't think it's Trump. And then again, we'll talk about the State of the Union address with Mark Tapscott, among a lot of other things going on. But that said, I'm going to have too much fun today, I swear, between tearing apart Blog Talk Radio, the State of the Union, and whatever else gets into my line of fire today. Whoo, boy. Whoo, doggy. It's going to be one heck of a show.
Yeah, I heard that he dressed down the SCOTUS last night in front of them. He just ripped at them.
Oh yeah.
I would have got up
and then had evicted and arrested the father of one of the 13 Marines that were killed in the fall of Kabul.
Yeah.
When the first act
Angel
besides
parent.
Ripping open the southern border for illegal aliens. And yesterday he took the ire of the left, calling illegal aliens illegal. Oh my goodness! They're welcomed visitors, whatever the newcomers, whatever the new phrase of the month is. No. He called them. How dare he say the people that are violating and criminally entering our country are illegal? Oh my goodness!
He went off script then. He wasn't supposed to say that. But in his heart, he knows they are illegal.
Mm. Oh, well, that said, I want to let people know that on Wednesdays, we do a pre-broadcast with a friend of mine, Vicki Tompkins, out of Colorado. She's up in El Paso County, Colorado, the heart of throw Donald Trump off the ballot lawsuit. We do a show called Moms Across America, put out by Dan Perkins, that people can watch by going to Dan Perkins, P-E-R-K-I-N-S Media, and catch Vicki and I. But the last couple of shows have been Dan and myself going on some great rants. Oh, he knows just what questions to, and buttons to push to get me going. But if you don't get enough of me here on Fridays or in the archives, check out Moms Across America through Dan Perkins Media. Check us out there. Anyway, everyone that listens to the show knows that we do a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go out to Detective Robert Garton of the Hartford Police Department in Connecticut. His end of watch was Wednesday, September 6th of 2023, last year. And this article is from two different periodicals. The first one is from CT Insider, is the Capital Region article for Hartford, by Catherine Dempsey and Caroline Ten. And the other one is from NBCConnecticut.com. And this, I don't have the person, name the person who wrote this, but I will cite both of them. And the first starts off, hundreds waited in line for hours to pay respects to Hartford Detective Robert, quote, Bobby, unquote, Garton, who was killed when police say an 18-year-old high school student drove into the side of his patrol car while fleeing a traffic stop. Officers from all over the state attended the calling hours at Duncan Park, where Garton loved to watch the Hartford Yard Goats play. His flag-draped coffin sat near second base under one of two canopies. Pictures of Garton as a boy, with his family and on the job, flashed on a giant screen, while soft rock played on stadium speakers. Occasionally, a pair of Hartford officers in their dress uniforms would slowly march across the grassy infield to the casket. They would do a slow salute in unison and slowly make their way back, their gold-covered buttons gleaming in the sun. Addison, a therapy dog from Tarrington, was among the many canines walked by their handlers. Also attending was Hartford Mayor Luke Bronin and Charles Rovella, Commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, and a former Hartford police chief. The organization, Mothers United Against Violence, which held a candlelight vigil in Garton's honor outside the Hartford Police Department this week, was also represented. Over 20 years, we have developed a friendship with the Hartford police, said Reverend Henry Brown. They have solved many murders. We feel we have to come and show all the love. Caroline Asselton was among the hundreds in line. Her twin brother, East Hartford officer Brian Asselton, was fatally shot while working the evening shift on January 23rd, 1999. My family got so much support, she said, adding that officers from other departments still reach out to see how she's doing. Hartford police cleared the way for the ambulance to take her brother to Hartford Hospital that night and later relayed information that led to the killer's arrest. They also took my family in, Asselton said, frequently asking how they could help. Like Asselton, Maureen Smith of Andover is connected to the Hartford police. Her daughter is engaged to a member of Garton's Street Crimes Unit, and Smith met Garton for the first time at the engagement party the weekend before he died. Smith was impressed. He's sweet, she said of Garton. At the end of the night when Smith was packing up the car, Garton came over and offered to help, she said. She took him up on the offer. You could tell he just had a big heart, Smith said. A large contingent of police in the line were from Bristol, where two officers, Lieutenant Dustin DeMonte and Sergeant Alex Hemsey were ambushed and fatally shot on October 12th. Bristol Chief Ryan Gould's advice to Hartford Police is to comfort one another. This is a situation where you've got to play it day by day, Gould said. The first steps for them right now is to take care of their brother and see him off with honors. Then the department has to rebuild, he said. As difficult as these days are, through strength and togetherness, they're going to pull through it, Gould said. You honor the fallen and the families is by getting together and being as strong as you can. Be there for each other to grieve and love and care. Bristol Police and officers from other departments are pairing up with Hartford officers to help patrol the city during the wake and the celebration of life at the XL Center. Gould said Bristol officers also have been attending roll calls in Hartford since Garton died. Prosecutors from the Hartford Criminal Courthouse were also among the mourners. Garton used to come to their office to get search warrants signed, and they also wore his signature smile, said Michael Weber, an assistant state's attorney. New Britain prosecutors filled in for them Friday afternoon while they attended the wake. Late that afternoon, more than two dozen police cadets stood in line on the field in their beige uniforms. They approached the coffin in twos, saluted, and crisply turned on their heels. Garton was a cadet before he became a police officer 8 years ago. A Weathersfield native and son of a former Hartford police detective, co-workers described the 34-year-old as good-natured and a dedicated officer, took on some of the toughest assignments as a member of the one of Hartford Police Department street crime units. He earned 5 awards during his time with the department, although police did not have a chance to present 2 of them. The Lee department posthumously promoted him from officer to detective. He was working for the North Street Crimes Unit on the night he died, September 6th. Garton and Officer Brian Kearney, the driver, were in a patrol car on Asylum Avenue when Richard Barrington, a high school student, fled a traffic stop, ran 2 red lights, and struck the cruiser broadside, killing Garton and seriously injuring Kearney. Police said they were not chasing Barrington, and a surveillance video of the motor vehicle stop confirms it. Kearney, who was released from the hospital, came to the wake to the applause of more than 100 officers. He attended the wake in a wheelchair. And from the NBC Connecticut, it goes on further to read. A sea of blue filled the floor of the XL Center in Hartford as family, friends, and fellow officers and the public gathered to say goodbye to fallen Hartford Detective Robert Bobby Garton. The celebration of life for Detective Garton was filled with emotion as those who knew him best remembered him as a great officer and an even greater person. He was only with us for 8 years, but his influence was immeasurable. He was and always will be our hero, Hartford Police Chief Jason Thody said. Garton died on September 6th at the age of 34 when a driver who was fleeing from a traffic stop hit the police cruiser that Garton was in. He was born and raised in Weatherford, lived in Newington, and graduated from the police academy in 2015, following his father's footsteps to become a Hartford police officer. Detective Garton's brother, Will, recalled the mischief the two of them would get into as children. He told a story about an 8-year-old Bobby attempting to enlist in the Navy. The Navy sent a packet to the Garton home and thanked Bobby for his interest, but he was a bit too young. They suggested the Sea Cadets, and Will said Bobby quickly joined and continued in the Sea Cadets through high school. Bobby, you were born, my little brother, and died my hero, Will Garton said. The most emotional moments came at the service when Detective Garton's partner, Officer Brian Kearney, took the stage to speak. Officer Kearney was driving the cruiser when it was struck on Asylum Avenue, and he sustained serious injuries. Through tears, Officer Kearney spoke about the bond the two of them shared and how exceptional an officer Bobby was. The two were part of the Hartford Police Department's Street Crimes Unit in the city's North End. They were responsible for taking some of the most dangerous criminals off of the streets of Hartford. A partner's love is one that takes two strangers and makes them brothers, Officer Kearney said. He spoke about the night of the crash and how Detective Garten always took care of him. In our last moments, somewhere between heaven and earth, I know Bobby told me to turn back and stay home so I could take care of my family and our teammates. I can hear him saying, "It's okay, Brian. I've got this." Officer Kearney choked up several times as he remembered his partner. "He saved my life that night by sacrificing his," he said. Before he left the stage, Officer Kearney had one more tribute for his partner. "My last gesture to my partner is to award him the highest honor the Hartford Police Department has to offer, the Medal of Valor. My Medal of Valor." He signed off for the unit, Unit 133, before placing his medal on Garten's casket. Today's show is dedicated to Detective Robert Bobby Garten. It is also dedicated to all the brave men and women that serve as first responders, be they law enforcement, firefighters, or emergency services. We also dedicate this show to all the brave men and women that serve in our military, protecting our nation from its wonderful birth through today and into our hopeful future. We dedicate to all of them, each and every one, this song by Tiffany, "Soul of a Nation." May God bless each and every one.
in our time has come. We gave them hope. We made them strong. Let it be said.
You're here listening to Southern Sense live on Blog Talk Radio. And, oh, I got to stop saying that because we probably won't be here next week. If all goes well, Curtis and I will be broadcasting mainly through our home webpage, which is the name of the show, Southern Sense, southernsense.net. You can catch us at or southern-sense.com. Either way, we'll bring us back to our website. We are having a problem with the embed player right now on the page, so I'm going to get a hold of Mark and not Mark Taps, got a different Mark, and get that rectified and find out why it's not broadcasting there. But Curtis and I are going to do a test on Sunday, and all goes well. We're out of here. People actually can see our smiling faces side by side. And it'll be so much better than just looking at only my face and pictures scrolling on the screen. We'll be actually able to see our guests and listen to them also, as well as go into our chat room and chat with us at the same time. We're waiting for Mark Tapscott to call in, but I'm telling you, he must be running around like a chicken with his head cut off after yesterday's State of the Union address. And, well, March 16th, I'll be married next. March 16th, I'll be married a total of 3 months, and boy, did we get into a fight. No, not bad. But I kept on saying that it wasn't a State of the Union address. It was a campaign speech. And the Constitution in Article 2, Section 3 mandates that the President of the United States appears before either House or both houses of Congress to deliver a State of the Union. And State of the Union means, all right, we've got X amount of people that have entered our country illegally through this border or through those ports. That's the State of the Union. And to tell what you have in plans for the country afterwards. But he did not give a State of the Union that I clearly understood. He was saying that we were at record number unemployment, record low unemployment. Well, that's because a lot of people stopped looking for work because the government has been handing money out left and right, our taxpayer dollars left and right. So what's the point of looking for employment when you can live off of Section 8 housing, welfare, food stamps, whatever handout that they have to give you, unlimited unemployment benefits. So what's the point of looking for unemployment when the government's going to let you sit home courtesy of the taxpayer, you and I?
Well, what they won't tell you is that a lot of people, because he was also bragging a couple of weeks ago about he had the highest number of people coming to the workforce. But what they don't say is that a lot of these people are returning after COVID, and then a lot of people are being counted twice if they have, you know, apply for two jobs In other words, it's the same person, but they have to work two or three jobs to make it. So they count each one of those as a new employee. And it's just, it's crazy. They don't tell the truth.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're not. And it was the first time that female employment and that of African-Americans here in the United States had hit a record low under Donald Trump. I believe the number at the lowest point was something like 3.4. It was the first time it was on par or equal to that of male white. We never saw that before in the history of this nation, where those numbers were so low they were almost equal to that of unemployed white male Americans. But we're not seeing that under Joe Biden. No, we're not. So when he's giving the State of the Union, he was telling a bunch of campaign lies. And it was lie after lie after lie that we were the safest. And did you see the father of one of the 13 Marines being forcibly removed, evicted, because he called Joe Biden out on his lie? We're not safer.
Yeah, I saw that clip.
When we see the number of murders rise, the murder capital of the nation, it's no longer Chicago. It's starting to become Philadelphia. When you have to have National Guard being called up to service in New York City to frisk people for guns, we have a crime problem. It is not the safest in history here in the United States. When I see in my own county here, a largely rural county, rise in the numbers of homicides, as well as other crimes, property crimes, burglaries, car theft occurring, we're not the safest ever in history. If anything, we're the most endangered. When we have what they're counting between 8 and 9 million illegal aliens in the country that they're aware of, when the number is closer to 20 million or more illegally in the country, no, we're not the safest ever. So this was not a State of the Union. And people are saying, oh, look how he seems so coherent. There didn't seem anything wrong with his mind. Oh, yeah? Play back the clips, honey. How many times he stuttered. And Lakin Riley, he called her Lincoln, and he was holding the button that Marjorie Taylor Greene gave him in his hand, reading it, and he said Lincoln instead of Lakin. When he can't even pronounce the victim's name properly, no. He's still losing his marbles. I mean,
well, what do you think of their spin on Trump repeatedly saying Obama? I mean, I know what's going on with Trump in that instance. He's really just saying that he knows Obama's behind the scenes, but the left is trying to say, oh, look at there, he just made another gaffe. He called Biden Obama. But see, most you know, Trump supporters know he's saying who he believes is really behind the power in D.C. right now, and that is Obama. But they would say, hey, you know, he's got memory problems too.
Lame stream media doesn't understand satire or sarcasm.
Oh, no.
And yet they are the biggest source of it for us, sarcasm and satire.
Right about that.
I mean, there's several times I'll be talking about Joe Biden, and I'll say Obama, because it really isn't much. Well, actually, I'm sorry. I actually think Obama was a better president than Joe Biden is. But then again, this is Obama's third presidency. And if Michelle Obama runs for presidency, it would become his fourth term as president. Sarcasm? Satire? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And, you know, in Article 2, Section 3, the Constitution dictates the President of the United States shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may on extraordinary occasions convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he should think proper. Yes, I stutter. I stuttered as a child, and I had to go to speech therapy to correct it. So occasionally I do stutter. Doesn't mean I'm mentally incompetent. Not like Joe Biden. But I did not hear information on the current state of the union. Honestly, I heard not a single fact on the current state of the union as dictated by Congress. Ronald Reagan did that. And when he did, I remember sitting back in the chair going, oh, crap. He actually read the Constitution, understood what his duty was. Did I hear it under this president? Not once. Not once. No.
Well,
that was no State of the Union. That was a campaign speech.
He knows he's behind in the polls, whether they want to recognize the polls or not. But I think that was, from what I hear, was an effort on his team's part to show that he's viral, he's energetic, you know, he's up for the job. So they pumped him up with a lot of B12 and whatever else they could, you know, to make him seem like, you know, he's got a lot of energy and he still had a few gaps, I understand.
Well, I'm trying to remember who it was that was on Newsmax, and I was listening to the commentary afterwards, and I forget who it was that said it, but they said, I don't know what the heck they gave him, but can I get some of it? Some good joy juice there. Some real good joy juice they were giving him to get him to stand up for all that time. But you could see after half an hour, that's when he started really stumbling and stuttering. But one of the things I noticed before even the State of the Union, people were filling in to their seats, Sweden, the Prime Minister of Sweden, went before the cameras and announced that they joined NATO. And I thought, oh, what a wonderful thing Sweden has just done as a favor to Joe Biden by making that announcement on the very day of the State of the Union. That was carefully scripted, very carefully orchestrated and scripted. This White House does know how to play the media. And, oh, did you catch Charles Barkley at all? Did you, Curtis?
Oh, yeah. You know, I have no respect for Charles Barkley. I haven't.
Ah.
Ever since he made that statement some years ago that he wasn't a role model for anybody's kid, you know. So, you know,
well,
he walked that
Charles
some
Barkley,
of what he said, I understand.
Yeah, well, Charles Barkley was on The View, and he turned around and he said the Democratic Party doesn't get black America. He says they don't get the black male. They left us alone a long time ago. They only come out for our vote during election season. Otherwise, they ignore us the rest of the time. And he was calling them out. It's the neighborhood I grew up in. It's still a nasty place to be. I'm paraphrasing. Don't expect me to quote. I'm just paraphrasing, folks. So don't get your panties up in a bunch right now. you can tell I'm on a roll today. And he rightly called it out. And then the women on The View started to go after him. And boy, did he slap them down. Not physically, verbally. And said, no, this is my point, and I'm standing by. And I just turned around and said, well, Sir Charles, you got my respect today. He called him out. He said, you're only coming after us for the vote, because this is now election season, so now you're going to trot us out, but you're going to ignore us the rest of the time. And rightly, he called it out. Right.
That's not the controversy I was talking about. He's in the news more recently for saying that if he catches any black person walking around wearing a T-shirt with a mugshot of Trump on it, he was going to punch them out.
Well,
and that's what
I guess
he said.
He's walked that back.
Well, kind of, sort of, because he doesn't want to lose his position at ESPN and all that, you know, and endorsements
yeah.
and stuff. But he wasn't thinking. But the fact that he even thinks that, you know, that You don't have the right to wear whatever you want. It just shows the goal.
Right.
It shows you how they think on the left. You know, you have to agree with us. And if you don't agree with us, you know, you're subject to certain penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, well, some of the other things I want to address that Biden spoke about. this bird-brained policy has for building a floating pier for relief going to Gaza. Number one, there is no guarantee that once they build this floating pier, that the relief that's on that naval vessel going into the harbor there will actually go to the people in Gaza and will not go directly to the fighters in Hamas. There's no guarantee, because once we turn that stuff over to the individuals, and we don't even know what vessels are coming out to the pier, this floating pier, that the relief will be on. We don't know who's getting it. No guarantee that it will go from where we intended to go directly into the hands of the people that truly need it. No, you and I know for a fact it will go into the hands of the Hamas fighters and the hierarchy. It'll never see the actual people on the ground in desperate need of it. And yeah, Tony Schaefer was on Newsmax earlier today, and they were asking about the relief. And he's someone that has handled the parachuting of supplies into various zones, be they peacetime or war zones. And unfortunately, one of the chutes failed to deploy. I guess it was yesterday or today, and five people, which included two young boys, were killed from the falling relief. And one of the things you do is that when you do send relief into zones, be they peacetime or war, you have someone on the ground coordinating it to making sure it gets to the actual drop zone or to the people that it's supposed to be receiving. And it actually gets distributed to the individuals it was intended for. And this is not in any of Biden's policies. So basically, we're throwing Band-Aids at something, but instead of giving them Band-Aids, we're giving them loaded weapons. And yes, food can be a loaded weapon, because a soldier with a full belly is going to fight harder than one with an empty belly. A soldier with a full belly has more strength and stamina than one with an empty belly. So yes, you know those foods, the blankets, the medicines are going to go to the fighters and to the hierarchy first, before it sees anyone else in need on the ground. So here's bird brain number one. The other thing I caught, and I'm going, I cannot, someone, whoever wrote the speech for him, was really on a roll. Because within a five-minute period, he compared himself, FDR, and Lincoln in his opening. And then he likens Putin to Hitler's invasion of Europe with Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Okay, I can get that. I can get that. But he had to throw Hitler in there and then within a breath mention MAGA. He cites Reagan and likens himself to Ronald Reagan. And then right after that, he then decries the January 6th insurrection. And what we're finding out about that, the Epoch Times has had several great articles covering this, and they have on the Epoch TV a great series on the January 6th, among other series they have. The camera that was on the bomb in front of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee's headquarters, there was a camera on that bench. People walked past where the pipe bomb was. And matter of fact, there were officers that walked past that. Kamala Harris's motorcade drove right past it after it was identified that there was a pipe bomb under that bench. And then before the bomb squad gets there, the cameras that were focused on the bench strangely get redirected, one to a highway and one to a railroad track. Now, as we learn afterwards, the only way these cameras got moved is that someone manually moved them. I don't mean they went out there and put their hands around the lens and moved them, but they hit the keyboard and redirected the cameras purposely. And the pictures that are coming out of the actual bomb, multiple expert sources are saying it is exactly the same bomb that they use in training exercises with law enforcement and the FBI, even down to the specific timer used on the bomb. The color of it, the timer, the the pipe itself, all duplicates of what the FBI uses. And now they have identified 250 individuals in the crowd on January 6th that breached the Capitol as FBI informants, sources, or possible confidential agents. 250 FBI sources instigating the incursion on the Capitol on January 6th. And now they're saying there's a possible another 2,100 people that could potentially be arrested between this year and next. They're going after more individuals that were in Washington, D.C. on the day of January 6th. And they want to prosecute them for being in Washington, D.C., whether they entered the Capitol or not. This is getting very, very scary. This is lawfare on anyone who happens to be someone who supports Donald Trump, someone who is a conservative, someone who is a Christian, someone who owns a gun, lawfully. They're coming after you and I.
I know. I mean, it's been almost like a semi-police state for a while here, as much as it's been gearing towards socialism. The monitoring of your bank accounts and things like that. I believe they wanted one time to get to know what was in your bank account if it went as high as 600. But I think now
any
it's
transaction
1,000.
Any transaction is $600 or more. So if you had $599, you're fine. But once you had $600 and your transaction was $600 or more, they wanted to know it. It used to be $10,000. And that was to keep an eye on people that were sending money orders overseas. Because a lot of illegal aliens were coming in, earning their money, turning them into money orders, and then sending that money overseas. Believe it or not, the vast majority of that money did not go to Mexico, South America. It went to India. Interesting.
Wow, what's going on over there?
India. But they traced the majority of the money orders that were being sent over from illegals working here in the United States were being sent to India. And that's where they said, we want to know about any transactions going overseas in the amount of $10,000 or more. And that was to prevent money laundering. Now, with this administration, it's $600. So, yeah. And we were talking about our last show, the ESGs, that these investment institutions are going into. Well, the same thing's going to happen with what they're doing in China. Your money is all going to be on digital currency. So if you're someone who's disagreeing with the state, if you're someone whose opinion doesn't match in lockstep with the liberal elite, you may not have access to your bank account. Your bank account may be suddenly cut off. Your funds may be suddenly confiscated if we go down that road. If cash is no longer king in this nation, then the king will be whoever sits in the White House and whatever they dictate for you. And it ain't going to be Donald Trump if we keep on going down this road.
If we are able to get him back in the office, I think that would be the best time we'll have, you know, maybe the only time we have to beat back a lot of this stuff, you know, this left-wing agenda. And I believe he's going to go for it. I mean, look how he's been persecuted ever since he announced that he was running for the presidency back in 2016, 15, or whatever it was. And he's not going to forget that, you know. A lot of people think that he might pick Nikki Haley as a VP. But I don't think he's going to forget that, you know.
No. I think she's burned too many bridges.
I do too, but you still got people that think that. And I'm like, how in the world can you believe that, you know? She didn't even sound conciliatory when she said she was suspending her, you know. I mean, she said it with somebody that had, like, attitude, you know. It was attitude in her, you know, I'm going to suspend my campaign speech.
Well, like I said, she burned a lot of bridges. And she pissed off a lot of people, unfortunately. But, you know, that's why we have the First Amendment, the freedom of speech. And that's something else that we're going to be finding, because with these ESGs, if you say the wrong thing, you're going to be shadow banned. You're going to be finding out that you don't have access to certain things you need.
You need
to put gas in your car? We're not going to activate the pump for you. You want to turn around and purchase this medication? I'm sorry, your insurance is no longer going to cover that for you. You know, we're going to find little bit by little bit, it's suddenly 1984. Big Brother is out there looking at you and watching over you. Well, they're doing it in China. They have, if you go past a billboard or any sort of a commercial sign, there's a camera inside there that registers the look on your face. And it will determine the attitude that you have at the moment you walk past that sign. They do that already here in the United States, because that way they can tailor the advertisement to something that you would like. If, for example, you're wearing something red, like I am today, the sign will say, oh, she likes the color red. Let me show her some clothing that's red and make her look up at the sign and say, oh, I like that. Maybe I'm going to go out and buy that. Or if you're driving a Jeep, and I'll recognize the fact you're driving, and they give you a Jeep commercial as you drive past the billboard or you walk past the billboard or something like that. You've got a dog, it's going to show you cute little puppies and puppy chow and things like that to make you buy the item. Well, they're doing that now in China to determine what your attitude is and how they can control you. With artificial intelligence, we're entering a whole world out there. And artificial intelligence actually scares the bejesus out of me. It really does. How it can manipulate us. And we're living in an age where we're going to be facing the same situations we had Isaac Asimov predicted in iRobot. We see the same thing that we read about in 1984. Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged. These things are all coming. These authors predicted what our future would be, and we're living it today, here, now, guys. You know, as I look over my notes from last night's State of the Union address, he was echoing that bipartisan border security bill. I'm sorry. It didn't even recognize anything that came out of the House bill, H.R. 2. And when you get Fetterman from Pennsylvania saying that he supports H.R. 2 and not the bipartisan bill coming out of the Senate, I think we've got a problem here. Well, you get a nut job, and he actually makes sense when you're supporting H.R. 2. I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. Someone really does get it. We really do need to shut the border down and take the tools we have already in place and use them to their fullest, and then close all those loopholes. The Senate bipartisan bill does absolutely nothing to that effect. There's nothing to close the border. It actually does not increase enforcement of the border or the enforcement of the laws. It acts like actually opens up more loopholes to extend stays, to extend work visas, to make it easier for people to illegally enter our nation. And then facilitates their ability to do so in this bipartisan bill. It does the exact opposite of what they claimed. They're claiming that there's a closing of the gap between the wealthy and the middle class and the impoverished. No, there is no closing of that gap. As a matter of fact, that gap is getting wider and wider. And those that are in the middle class, people like you and I, Curtis, are finding ourselves dropping down, not gaining ground, but dropping down. When you're paying $3 a gallon for gasoline, when under Trump I was paying $1.69, it's not closing the playing field. It is widening it. It is widening the gap. And when you turn around and tell me that your late fees on your credit cards are going to go from whatever is odious and burdensome, be it $35 or $41 or $80, whatever your credit card agreement is that you signed, drop it down mandatory to $8, do you know what that's going to do to you and I, Curtis? We won't be able to have a credit card, because when they drop it down to $8 to make up the difference, these institutions will turn around and raise the interest rate to something so high that we can't afford it. And if someone does forget to make their payment or deliberately skips their payment, it's a mere $8. They don't care.
Well,
they'll declare bankruptcy, and then getting credit would be even harder to do.
Most of the people I know who have credit cards now, they're pay anywhere from 24 to 29% interest on it, which is crazy. I mean, back in the '80s, it was like maybe 9%, 10, 11 at the most on interest.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to Joe Biden, you know, this country made a sharp turn, a U-turn, with two things he did, and one was he rescinded every executive order on the border that Trump had in place. Number two, he stopped the pipeline. And
oh, yeah.
Those things are things he could do with just a stroke of a pen. He can undo, rather, but he won't do it.
No. But what he's going to do is build 500,000 new EV stations, electronic vehicle recharging stations across the America. Where in our power grid can we support 500,000 new charging stations? And where are these? I'm sorry. Are there that many cars, electric cars, in our nation at this point to require 500,000 charging stations?
Well,
and people
when did
are
that
not
become
even buying the
government?
EVs. Yeah, what is it? Why is it the role of government?
Yeah, why?
I mean, Shell and Texaco and BP and ExxonMobil, they're the ones opening up the stations for, you know, gasoline. So if they want to get into the ball game, then again, Shell, Exxon, Texaco, or whatever company out there should say, hey, I can make a couple of bucks here. I can make a killing if I have the only electronic charging station in the county. Well, why don't I just not open one, but open 5 or 10 of them out throughout the county and be known as the electronic vehicle charging tycoon?
Tell you
if
what,
there was actually money in that.
People have seen electric cars have issues. And more recently, I think in a place where there was a lot of cold weather and their cars wouldn't start. And
yeah,
they see this.
Them.
And yeah. So,
under
you know,
freezing
I mean,
weather, they don't charge.
Yeah. Consumer spending is supposed to drive the markets, but it seems like government always want to put their 2 cents in, you know, and
mm-hmm.
steer things. I think they think they are Germany because, if I'm mistaken,
yes,
Hitler
right.
came up with the Volkswagen. He decided, you know, was going to put out a car
well,
that everybody
that is
use,
the difference.
And he had the specs.
That's the difference between our democratically elected republic and fascism. And that's where we're heading. When government now dictates what business does and business walks in lockstep as a partner to government. That is not a democracy. That is not our republic. That is called fascism, leading to socialism, which then, in the end, leads to totalitarianism, communism, where government is everything. It is your God. It is your government. It is your family. It is your nanny. It's your employer. When your government is the end all of all, it takes the place of God. And that is when we lose our humanity. And we can be on the road to losing our humanity today when we place government above God. And I'm seeing it throughout this speech, and I'm seeing it throughout this administration, and throughout the wokeism that we're seeing in our country today. When you turn around and you chastise me because I used the wrong pronoun on you, I'm sorry. You look like a man, you talk like a man, you walk like a man. I'm going to assume the individual I'm staring straight at is a man. And if you decide to tell me that your name is actually Susie Q, okay, I'll call you whatever you want. I'll call you a paper bag if that makes you happy. It doesn't mean what I'm looking at is still not a man. It doesn't make me a homophobe. I'm just looking at something in front of me, and my mind and eyes are identifying it. You were born a man. I've got this thing where they say, you know, God created man, God created woman. And what you turn around and change yourself into, hey, that's your business. I'm not going to criticize you. That's your choice. You have the freedom to choose it. So go. Live your happy life. I don't care. Just don't force me to be something I'm not. I'm not going to force you to be something you're not, and don't force me to. And then we get along together. Meanwhile, Curtis is going to be calling our guest in. Hopefully, she'll be joining us within a few moments. But anyone else wants to post in the chat room what they thought about the alleged State of the Union speech last night, if that's what you want to call it. We call it a glorified campaign speech. But I have little notes all over the place. I don't even know what to say. And, of course, believe it or not, he's talking about Lakin Riley, who was brutally murdered by an illegal alien. And then he brings up his son, Bo, again. I don't think that man could ever enter into anything without comparing the loss of his son, Bo, to the violent murder of this young woman. I mean, you're talking apples and oranges. There's no comparison. But with that said, I want to bring back onto the show someone who I have not spoken to in over a decade, because we both came up through the Tea Parties in the 2009-2010 together, and I started the show here in 2010, and I didn't mean to forget her and push her aside, because I still run my Tea Party, Catherine Engelbreit of True the Vote. Good afternoon, Catherine. I think the last time I spoke to you, you were just starting off with True the Vote, and my bad. I'm 14 years running, and I hadn't had you back on. I'm slapping myself. Hear that? I'm hitting myself.
No worries. I've been kept very busy, so don't worry. It's all good. But pleasure to be back with you after all these years.
Yeah, I know. It's been such a long, long time. And like I said, there's so many people out there doing good work, such as you. And as I was going over your website, I had a laugh because I'm involved in the executive committee on my local county GOP. And everything you have on your website is exactly what we have been doing. And with True the Vote, you have been fighting for election integrity, but also to get out people out there to vote and to be active, to become poll watchers, to know what to look for and to how to invigorate people to vote. And I'm saying, dang, I think our county chair must have read your website. Either that or everyone's got a great message here.
Well, you know what? I will consider that a compliment, even if it doesn't have any crossover. Just the knowledge that you went and looked at it and saw value in it, we appreciate it. We're working hard. You know, it's every state runs things a little differently, county to county, jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but there are some common truths, and it's around those truths essentially, and most importantly, the notion that elections should be trustworthy. And there should be a process that follows law and we can rely upon. It's those kinds of things that we are seeing more and more Americans rally to. And it's an exciting time. We think it's sort of a renaissance of election integrity after a really rough go in 2020 and for the years that followed. But we're the movement is now coming into its own and you know, just in the nick of time.
You know, I had a clip. And I don't know what I do with it. I think I may have deleted it because it went back all the way to 2016. And it was someone that worked with the electronic voting machines. And he was a programmer. And he testified in court, and I believe it was in Chicago, about how easy it was to manipulate the programming in these machines. So that here you are, you're saying, all right, I'm flipping the switch for Donald Trump. The ballot prints out. And I see Trump on there, but when you feed it through the hopper to place your final vote, the scan code on the hopper changes it and flips it to someone else. But everyone's saying, no, you can't do that with these machines. It can't be done. But we are finding that some of these machines can be manipulated, can't they?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, every you know, where there's a human, there's room for manipulation. Nothing is foolproof. There's, you know, machines can be manipulated, paper ballots can be manipulated, bad actors can get involved on either and any side of it. The thing that is most discouraging around the now known fact that, yes, machines can be manipulated, even as was proven in a recent court case in Georgia, even with just a, you know, with the use of a ballpoint pen live in court, they were able to trick the machine into switching votes. But there are preventative measures that can be taken, and it's those preventative measures that have just been so carelessly disregarded, and that's to me the place that we should be really focusing on is building technology or employing technology that doesn't have the gaps in it, because it's just not been a priority for election administrators. Now that America is watching, I think things are going to get markedly better and fast.
Well, you just recently had a bit of a win back in January of this year against Fair Fight, Stacey Abrams, Mark Elias. And a lot of people don't know who Mark Elias is, but he's someone that's very quietly working behind the scenes. But now we're sort of starting to pull him out of the woodwork with court cases like you've had, exposing him for the manipulator he is. But tell us about this win you just had out of Georgia.
Sure. So the case started initially in 2020. We'd been made aware of how inaccurate and problematic the Georgia voter rolls were. Interestingly, the state of Georgia only cleans its rolls once every other year in odd years in the first 6 months of the year. And so their rolls hadn't been cleaned since early 2019. And of course, there were all kinds of shenanigans that occurred between early 2019 and November of 2020. And so we took a closer look at the records and came to learn that there were approximately 364,000 ineligible records on the current Georgia voter rolls, and they were heading into the runoff in January of 2021. And because citizens do have the authority to challenge ineligible records, we equipped volunteers, citizen voters, in their respective counties to present these files to their counties and ask them to take a look. It should have been a very discreet process, but as soon as it was announced, Fair Fight sued us within just a couple of days. That lawsuit, and they tried to claim that we were intimidating voters and that we were being reckless and so forth. That played out in a pretty intense lawsuit over 3 years, and we finally won in December, as you note, and that was a tremendous victory over Stacey Abrams and Fair Fight and Mark Elias and the Biden Department of Justice. They have since come back and appealed, so now we are preparing our brief for the 11th Circuit Court. But it just goes to show a couple things. First, just how bad the rolls really are. And second, the lengths to which groups like Fair Fight and lawyers like Mark Elias will, you know, jump in and spend, you know, seven figures to try to prevent the truth from coming out. But we beat them fair and square.
You know, meanwhile, now you've got like 3-4 years of your life thrown out the window at how much expense also. And that's what they want to do. They want to do the lawfare on us. So if they can't intimidate us publicly by shaming us, they'll go after us and bankrupt us. And that's their intent. You may eventually say, well, it's going to cost me too much to challenge them, so I'm just going to walk away. That's what they're hoping for.
Oh, sure. But I'll tell you this, you know, you brought up that we started back in the Tea Party days together. Prior to starting True the Vote in 2009, I'd been in business in oil and gas for 16 years. I'd never been in a lawsuit, never had any kind of dust up with any government authority. Since filing for nonprofit status for True the Vote in 2010, as soon as I did that, I was, within just a few weeks, sued twice for, you know, specious reasons, ended up winning both those lawsuits. But since then, since 2010, I've never been out of court. And I think because of that, I've developed pretty thick skin around all of this. So we no longer look at things and think, oh, we shouldn't do that. We might get sued. If it needs to be done, we're going to do it. If we get sued, we'll deal with that too. But, you know, time is fleeting. We are fighting for the life of our republic, and we have to swing for the fences.
That we definitely have to. And it takes courage, it takes guts, it takes stamina, which you have proven to have, because just for, you know, little giggles and kicks, I went up and pulled up your profile under Wikipedia. Oh, good Lord,
oof.
Girl. Have you looked at it lately?
You're talking to a certifiable monster. Woof.
How dare you? And oh my goodness, you actually went to jail. They actually put you behind jail because you wouldn't give up your source. I mean, come on. They would do anything and everything to intimidate you and anyone else that you're working with. And that's the shameful part. You know, you and I have the attitude, let's get along and go along, get along. But if we see a problem, hey, let's correct it and let's make everything work hunky-dory. But that's not how they want to look at it. And I got to admit, back a number of years ago, we had a local county council election, and we wanted to place someone on the ballot. We had to actually manually walk door to door, knocking on doors to get him written in on the ballot to get enough petition signatures for him to be a write-in. And going through the voter rolls, because that's what we were using to go through the voting precincts, just doing that alone, we found a lot of errors. So I can just imagine what you would do if you went completely statewide. And people don't understand. You know, you move from one place, you go and get a new driver's license, and with the motor voter laws now, you automatically register to vote, blah, 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 which I don't agree with. I'm sure you don't either. But you find so many errors. I mean, I know one individual specifically. Yesterday, I pulled up his voting record, and I said, you know, your voting record has your correct address, but your driver's license, which you changed at the time they put you on the voting roll, was not changed. So your driver's license doesn't match your voter registration. You're going to have a problem. But stupid things like that, and that's what True the Vote is out there working on.
That's exactly right, and it's one of the newest things that we've launched is an initiative to address just what you've described, and it's called Scan, Check, Protect. And the idea is we have a QR code. You can scan it. It takes you to a spot on our website where you can get registered to vote if you're not already registered, check your registration in any state of your residence, make sure it's accurate. As you point out, you have errors like that that you want to go ahead and get cleaned up now so you don't have a problem when you get ready to cast your ballot in November or, you know, this fall. But then the last piece, and it's the one that shocks more people than not, is that if you have ever moved outside of the state in which you originally registered to vote when you were however old you were, moving from state to state, most people think that when you move out of state that voter registration record cancels. But in most cases, it doesn't. It stays there. And in this new sort of age of mass mail out of ballots, it creates a real opportunity for people who want to exploit those weaknesses and vulnerabilities in the process to, you know, use your record. You would never know. You would never know. But yet, if it ever came down to it and there was ever a criminal investigation done, it would appear as though you had voted in more than one place in the same election, and you would be held accountable for that. So we are encouraging people to use what we've put together to look at any state you've moved out of that you may have been registered and just see. Hopefully it's taken care of and the registration isn't there, but we have gotten report upon report upon report from people who are thanking us saying, I was registered in three other states. I had no idea. And there are steps you can take now to get your name removed, and that's exactly what should be happening. So it's time for some good spring cleaning. Get those registrations off the books now.
Oh, absolutely. And I did. I ran my name and I ran a friend's name through there also, and that's when we found the error. And I said, well, you know, I think before November hits, you better get down to motor vehicles and get that corrected. But it's going to cost $35. I'll give you the $35 to change it. But it is just good. You know, what I would love to see, if you key in an address to see who's registered to vote out of that address, because I know here in South Carolina, in our county specifically, we kind of led the state in changing the voting laws here after the 2020 election and got in place things where it makes it difficult to harvest votes. And all those things that were happening in the 2020 election and bring back more election integrity into our state. But it would be interesting to just go past an address, key in the number, and it's like, all right, that's a butcher shop or that's a pet store. How many people are registered to vote out of that building? And I think we would find ourselves very amazed to find people are actually registered to vote out of a business.
Indeed, and in fact, we do have something like that. It's called IV3, and you can check it out. It's the letter I, the letter V, the number 3.us. And if you look right now, you'll see that it still says it's closed because we had spun it down for this lawsuit and some other reasons. We are in the process, and next week we'll be relaunching it with the functionality that you've just described. Now, we do put people that want to participate through a pretty high standard of making sure that they intend to use the data wisely, that they aren't going to exploit it, that we get all manner of terms and conditions signed, but we have about 40,000 people that in the past have used this system to look at their local voter files, and that's exactly the kinds of things that we show them and equip them to point those things out to their counties so that, again, in the hopes of the county can make the proper adjustments.
That was, you like the way I segued into that for you.
That was great.
Well, you also have toolkits up there. Calendars telling how to do certain things at what time before an election, how to build your teams. You've got a lot of great things on your website, which is truethevote.org. And I'm going to encourage anyone out there listening, if you do want to get involved to make sure there is election integrity, go onto the website and look at that. Because as I'm looking at what you have there, I'm saying we actually have been doing that here within our county, which I'm very pleased that we are on that same page. But you even have how an idea actually then becomes a law. And I don't know if you watched the State of the Union last night. I had to have a barf bag. Yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
But I just nearly fell out of my Archie Bunker chair when I heard Biden say, and I will overturn Roe v. Wade and make it law again. I'm going, excuse me? I'm sorry. What part of the Constitution does your power come from?
Oh,
I don't seem to see that. And then openly threaten the Supreme Court. Openly threaten
outrageous.
Them.
Absolutely outrageous.
What were the takeaways you got out of that campaign speech we saw last night?
Yeah, I don't even, I just shook my head. I think the biggest takeaway was we are in real trouble if he is reelected. I mean, we're in trouble now, but if he is reelected, I mean, we are the laughingstock of the globe. And, It's very, very concerning to see someone who is clearly not mentally rigorous enough to withstand the kind of stress that the leader of the free world, you know, has to be able to bear up under, and the you know, weird screaming match that we saw last night was just, I don't know, it was just embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. Very, very, very. You know, one of the things you have on your website under the Be Vocal, Act Local, and this is something I always tell people, to talk to your local lawmakers, whether it's the dog catcher, the town mayor, the county council, whatever. All politics starts locally and then just goes up the food chain. And one of the things that you have is how to talk to your local lawmaker. And you go there with a reason, a serious issue, and you stay on point. We had a protest in front of, at that point, after Mark Sanford was my congressman, it became Joe Cunningham, or as we call him, Beer Can Joe. I don't know if you remember his going onto the House floor with a six-pack of beer, which was like, no alcohol on the floor.
Oh, gosh.
So we nicknamed him Beer Can Joe. And I actually had to sign Beer Can Joe until my cat pissed on it. Literally did. So we were protesting outside his local office here. But I said, you know, if you're going to go in and express to them why we're protesting, you be cordial, be polite, leave the sign outside the door. Leave the sign outside the door. Go in and make sure they take down your name, your phone number, and your address. And if one person goes in, ask someone. If two people go in, maybe there's something here. Three people go in, their ears start to go up. If you get five or more, it becomes an important issue they must address. And people don't understand that formula works. So I said, when you do that, don't go by yourself. Get other people to do the same thing. And
that's exactly right.
What would you say to someone?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, going in group, making sure that you are well equipped to not just point out the problem, but try to create as much research or support around a possible solution, and position yourself as a an advocate, so that you know. Our elected officials, I mean, clearly, you know, we've all got our gripes, but at the end of the day, to be able to approach them with a problem and a recommended solution, or at least things to think about, or what we would like to see, and then, you know, a display a willingness to work with them, to stand with them, and to remember, you know, that this is their all. Being in government leadership is far more, frankly, far more complicated than it sometimes seems from the outside looking in, because you've got all manner of trade-offs. It's not that should be the case. It just is. And so you've really got to understand all of the hot buttons and how to affect the greatest amount of change in the most efficient way, and doing that with the group and by being polite and determined, you know, you can get an awful lot of good work done.
Absolutely. And what I always say is, you know, reach out to organizations that are like-minded, and a lot of them will then turn around and reach back down to you. Recently, FairUS.org reached out to a bunch of local community activists, people like you and like me, and they brought us up to D.C. in support of H.R. 2, which is the immigration bill from the House. And I was absolutely shocked and surprised, because whoever from our group came from Pennsylvania and walked into Fetterman's office, I want to shake that person's hand and kiss them on the lips, because if mm-hmm. Fetterman turns around and supports the House version, H.R. 2, over the bipartisan bill that Biden was touting last night, they did one heck of a good job.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But see, it works. It works, because obviously he saw something, or his aides saw something, and said, well, maybe you better take another look at this and why they're not supporting that. And it does work occasionally, and surprisingly and beautifully.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. And more people are finding their path into this kind of, you know, citizen-led advocacy, and it's a great thing to see.
It is. It is. Well, Catherine, it has been a pleasure having you with us. I mean, we're down to our last 5 minutes on the clock, and God, we were supposed to have Mark Tapscott from the Epoch Times with us, and I guess because of the State of the Union, he's running on a deadline, so I'll beat him up later.
I appreciate being with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I haven't forgotten about you. Just we've had so many great guests over the years that – you know, it's like, okay, this issue just came in front of me. But with going on the State of the Union, you were like a perfect follow-up after that campaign speech last night.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and, you know, we're all in it together.
Well, God bless, Catherine. And people will find you at truethevote.org. And also, as soon as you get back up, IV3, IV3.us. God bless you, Catherine, and thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Curtis. We do have someone lined up already for next week, and I forget who the heck it is. Let me see if I can figure out who the heck is coming up next week. I'll pull up the episodes, and I know I put someone in here. Just come on, here we go. Okay, I already titled it, Becoming Failure. Are you ready? Oh, Steve Gorham, he's the author of a new book called Green Breakdown, Becoming Renewable Energy Failure. And with Biden promising a half a million new EV stations in the near future, on courtesy of your tax dollar, what a follow-up he would be after that speech.
Yeah, he must think he's on that TV show back in the 60s called King for a Day.
Oh, man. But I got to say, they picked a good person, Kate Britt, to do the rebuttal. She's a Republican out of, wrote down the initials of the state, and I can't read my handwriting.
Well, how did that go?
It was a little bit long, and a lot of people complained, oh, she did it out of her kitchen. Oh, come on. Who was it that was toting the beer out of their kitchen? I forget what Democrat. Was that, oh, good Lord. I have a brain fart right now. Never mind.
Well,
it doesn't matter. Anyway,
I thought they wanted people working out of their homes ever since COVID.
Oh, well. That's all we got for today. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Check back with our website, and we'll let you know how you can watch us and listen to us come next week, because anything I do here on Blog Talk Radio will not be a live. It will be an upload after we do the live show. So if you do want to join us live, please check back onto our homepage, southernsense.net. And I'm going to get a hold of my friend Mark and say, Mark, come on, we got to get this. But first, Curtis, you and I are going to do the test on Sunday, make sure everything's running up and going smoothly. That's all I got for now. So I'll leave you with a song from our friend Gary Pecorella, Save America. So I say good night and God bless and thank you for joining us. Nope, that's the wrong one. Sorry, that was the wrong one. I clicked the wrong one. It's the one below it.
Yeah.
It can't always be perfect
okay.
all the time. It can't be perfect all the time. Here we go.
I'm praying for this land I love. America, America, the home of